Good morning. I'm Elke Lorenz, and I'm your convener today. Thank you for being here, and welcome. I will start with the opening words to the four directions. Spirit of the East, spirit of air, of morning and springtime, be with us as the sun rises in times of beginning, times of planting. Inspire us with a fresh breath of courage as we go forth into new adventures. Spirit of the South, spirit of fire, of noontime and summer, be with us through the heat of the day and help us to be ever-growing. Warm us with strength and energy for the work that awaits us. Spirit of the West, spirit of water, of evening and autumn, be with us as the sun sets and help us to enjoy a rich harvest. Flow through us with a cooling, healing quietness and bring us peace. Spirit of the North, spirit of earth, of nighttime and winter, be with us in the darkness, in the time of gestation. I would like to welcome all of you to this Thanksgiving weekend service, and I would like to welcome all visitors, members, and friends who are here today. I would like to ask Kathleen to light the chalice for us to begin our program. At times, our own light goes out and is rekindled by a spark from another person. Each of us has cause to think with the deep gratitude of those who have lighted the flame within us. I would like to refer you to the order of service with all the announcements we have for events that are forthcoming. And I have two further announcements to make. Stacey Brauman has the petition from Save Our Social Services for those of us who would like to sign it. Could you just raise your hand? Thank you, Stacey. Also, the UUFM website is now set up for discussion. If you feel moved to continue the conversation after the service or any others, you may add comments on the service under past services. And this announcement comes from Chair-elect Scott Tanona. Please stand as you're able to for the opening hymn, number 361, Enter, Rejoice, and Come In. Michael Oldfather and Jennifer Bryan will accompany us. Just Michael. Thank you.
Enter, rejoice, and come in. Enter, rejoice, and come in. The day will be a joyful day. Enter, rejoice, and come in.
It is now time in our order of service to share joys and sorrows in our lives. If you have a joy or concern to share, we would like for us to come up to the podium today because of microphone issues. So please come on up and share a joy or concern. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Nathan Albin. I guess this is mainly a sorrow, but also kind of a joy. My wife's grandmother, Cynthia's mother, died. It'll be two weeks from this coming Tuesday. Unexpectedly, Cynthia and Courtney were able to get to Hayes, Kansas, where she was in the hospital in time to be with her. So it was a hard time, but it was also a time of coming together with family and celebrating her life. And then this Thanksgiving, we had several family members come to visit us, and we had been looking forward to that because we haven't been with family for a while. So that was it was enjoyable, but we also missed Courtney's grandmother a lot.
It was a great joy of mine to have been able to spend the last week or so in Tennessee at a piece of property that we have and share that with my family and romp around in the woods and look at birds and enjoy the great scenery that's there. And if any of you are ever going to Tennessee, let me know. It's a great place to visit.
Thank you for those joys and concerns, shared and unshared. It will now be time for our children's presentation. I think we have a very special treat in store for us. Corey and other RE teachers will lead the children in sharing with us.
Hello. Oh, now it's on. Okay, great. Thank you. I'm going to hold it, I think. Could all the children please come forward and sit up front? Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Did you have a good holiday? Yeah. So one of the things that I reflected on being thankful for was working with you guys. And I was especially happy to be working with you this past month when we did our social action projects, because you guys showed that as much as you care for each other, you also care for the farms in our community, the animals in our community, the people who are sick in our community, and our community even right here, our fellowship. So I thought today we would tell the fellowship a little bit about the projects that you guys worked on, okay? So in the month of November, all of our classes did social action projects. And they spent the month, they got to sort of choose some of the projects that they worked on, and they dedicated their time and energy to helping community. And it started even in the toddler room. The infants and toddlers worked hard this month figuring out how they could help out at home. So they practiced setting the table and pretend washing an animal and making their bed and tying their own shoes, things that they could do to help out at home to make life a little easier. They're not here with us because they're still in the nursery, so I thought I would share what they worked on. And I'm going to let the other classes share themselves. So could the preschool please come on up and talk a little bit about what you did? We're going to use this microphone right here. Or this one.
We made hand turkeys and... We made It was a lot of fun.
Thank you so much, Rose. That was great. Yeah. Oh, well, the other people are taller, so it's okay. All right, well, okay, Maeve. Okay, so the next group that's going to talk to us is the third through sixth grade class, and they're going to talk a little bit about ethical eating.
Good morning. Last week, the third through sixth grade Sunday school made the snacks for the fellowship with help from our teacher, Larry Weaver. We used all local and organic food except for the peanut butter chocolate chip cookies. We couldn't go without the chocolate. The way it started was that we had the choice between water, wildlife, or food for a project. We chose food. 2 weeks before we made the snack, we went to the People's Grocery Store. Sylvia Beeman was our tour guide. She showed us the dried spices and the peanut butter maker. She also showed us the local food that they have there. She talked about the top 10 pesticide veggies and fruits. When the tour was done, a local grower, Elaine Moore, talked to us what the words local and organic mean. She also talked to us about pesticides. The next week, we decided who was going to make what food in our class. On Thursday, we went and bought most of the food. Larry went out the next day to buy the rest of the food. Finally, on Saturday, we made the food. During service the next day, we set all the food out. The whole project would have been a lot harder without Larry, and I'm really thankful for him and his help.
Like Maeve said, on Saturday, we made the food, and some of the food was lemon poppy seed bread, and the mix was put together in Clyde, Kansas. Maeve and Ellie made that. And then me and Maeve made quesadillas. The quesadillas were called Mama Lupe's, and they were made in Mound Ridge, Kansas, and the cheese was from Alma. Indigo and Ellie made egg salad. The eggs were from Kansas. And then the peanut butter chocolate chip cookies were our one exception to eating local because we decided we couldn't imagine a life without chocolate. So the chocolate was from some country, but it was organic. And the peanuts were from Georgia. And me, Ellie, and Maeve made these. The bread, we made our own bread, and Maeve helped Larry. And most of the stuff, like Maeve said, was bought at People's. We also had honey with bread. That was local raw honey. And there were other breads that we bought from People's that were made locally.
The results of our project are that we saved gallons of gas by buying local food. We saved the environment by buying organic. No pesticides were used, and we helped the local economy by buying produce. Tortillas, cheese, honey formed from local farmers.
Our last group to present today is our K through second graders, and they spent the month working on various animal projects that will tie in with today's sermon by Laura Lott. Molly and any K through second grader who wants to come on up.
I'll go ahead and ask some questions. Okay, Lauren, you want to come up here? Come here. So do you remember when Pat and Barstow came? Were you here that week? Okay, can you tell us who was Pat and Barstow?
Well, I sort of forget.
Okay. We had a busy Thanksgiving too, I understand. Thank you. Okay. So we had a week, the first week was bird feeders, and what did we make with our bird feeders?
Well, yeah, but we kind of made bird feeders with milk cans, and we put bird stuff, and we kind of made pine cones with...
We used milk jugs and pine cones and peanut butter, and we had Mark Mayfield and Michael Oldfather were our guests, and Michael shared his log of watching birds and feeding them, and Mark shared his expertise and brought an awesome book with bird calls, and the kids all made bird feeders that they could take home, and we talked about just different ways, because the week before had been Principle 7, the web of life, that tied in really well, and the kids were really excited about that. And then the next week, Dr. Pat Payne from the vet school came. She helps train guide dogs, and she takes them for that year between puppy and when they're ready for their actual training. And so Barstow is her guide dog in training, and she talked about how hard it is to give up the dog. Because what we hope we have been teaching the kids is that when you care about something, you do something about it, even when it's hard. And it's very hard for Dr. Payne to give up those dogs after caring for them and loving them for a year. But when she gives them to their new owner and sees what a difference they can make in their disabled owner's life, then it's worth it to Dr. Payne. And then the next week, which was last week, we had two dogs come and visit. Do you remember what kind of dogs they were, Ron? Shyness. We had two corgis come and visit. One of my friends fell in love with corgis and has helped rescue 50 corgis from all around the Midwest and the country. And she's trained her corgis to do agility. And so we had two corgis running through tunnels last week, which was pretty funny. I was sad that it wasn't warmer outside and we couldn't do. And then I had the kids do agility. They jumped through some hula hoops and things like that. But they also made bookmarks and collected towels for the local animal shelter, the T. Russell Wright's Animal Shelter. And so from the bookmark proceeds that I've already been given, we've made $26, and we're going to go back to our classroom and vote on which charity to give it to. And the three charities of choice that the kids are going to vote on are the National Wildlife Federation, the KSDS that does the guide dogs, and then our local shelter. So you'll see us when we walk out. I'm going to ask the kids to each grab some towels that they decorated last week. So we've collected 48 towels and blankets, one jug of laundry detergent for the local animal shelter, and then we have at least $26, if not more, to donate. So it's been a really fun month, and I appreciate all the help and assistance that we got from various members of the fellowship to make it happen.
Thank you guys so much for your hard work this month, and we are going to be continuing our good works by kicking off our Guest at Your Table program, and you'll be hearing more about that in the coming weeks. Thank you all so much.
Thank you so much, children and RE teachers. You've done a marvelous job. We appreciate all you do. It is now time for our offertory. Let there be an offering to sustain and strengthen this place, which is sacred to so many of us, a community of memory and of hope, for we are now the keepers of the dream. We will now hear a personal reflection by Sylvia Beeman, longtime member and friend. Why do I love my dog?
Hello. My friend Trottle has lived a couple blocks from me for 30 years. Our daughters played soccer and went to school together, but we met through our dogs. Trottle's first dog, a stunning white German Shepherd named Max, frequently escaped and somehow always managed to jump our four-foot fence to visit our husky chocolate lab mutt, Brownie. Over the years, Trottle's and my friendship grew as we each have had three dogs in series. We encountered each other infrequently and by chance while transporting our dogs or walking them at cherished spots where a rambunctious dog could run in ecstatic abandon. On our most recent encounter, Trottle slowed and rolled down her window to chat as she drove by my house. "How's Queenie?" I asked, remembering that dog number 3 was quite old and losing her sight. Trottle burst into tears. Gosh, this makes me feel sad already. Queenie had died more than a year ago, but Trottle was still consumed with grief. I had had a similar experience. My second dog, an escape artist named Bruce, was hit by a car when I was away all day moving my mother's belongings. I returned at midnight to find him dead on my kitchen doorstep, where he always returned after an adventure, wagging his tail and smiling at me through the kitchen window to be let in. I cried for several months any time I thought about him. Trottle and I agreed that we had shed more tears and felt as deep a sadness at the death of our dogs as at the death of people dear to us. Trottle and I wondered, why were we so attached to our dogs? But then, by chance, I heard a radio interview of science writer Meg Daly Olmert, author of Made for Each Other, on the role of the hormone oxytocin in human-animal bonding. And my daughter Chloe brought me a new book from the Manhattan Public Library, where she works, by biologist Rob Dunn, called The Wild Life of Our Bodies. These books began to answer Trottle's and my question. In fact, Trottle and I are no different from tens of millions of pet owners who swear they feel as bound to their pets as they do to their families, if not more. The renowned evolutionary biologist E.O. Wilson believes we have an innate attraction to all of nature, which he has named biophilia. Is this why animal sounds and their names and body parts are among the first words we teach our children? Why we fill their cribs and rooms with plush animal toys? Why animals constitute more than 90% of the characters employed in language acquisition and counting in children's preschool books? Why, of all cartoon conventions, talking animals may be the most popular? Or why Americans will spend more than $50 billion this year on their pets? Anthropologists argue vehemently over the messy piles of bones from hoofed animals and Homo sapiens found across Africa, Europe, and Asia about when exactly our ancestors became hunters. But it is agreed that for most of the past 1.5 million years, our predecessors were, as people still are in some parts of the world, the prey of bears, wolves, giant cats, constricting snakes, and enormous birds of prey. Whether prey or predator, Paleolithic humans became, of necessity, astute and intimate observers of animals. This is obvious from accurately detailed carvings as old as 32,000 years and the tens of thousands of cave paintings that have survived, some as old as 17,000 years, that depict a preponderance of animals in striking action poses with realistic anatomical proportions, shading, and even whisker patterns. Humans were rarely drawn, and when they were, it was usually as stick figures or melds with animal forms. Apparently, animals dominated the thought processes of long-ago humans just as they do us and our many acquaintances who relentlessly pummel each other with cute anecdotes about our pet dogs, cats, gerbils, and fish, and embellished accounts of encounters with other animals. At a recent dinner party I attended, those present spent the entire meal recounting cow anecdotes. And yes, I told more than my fair share. About 10,000 years ago, people began the process of domesticating 20-some chosen species of animals, a long process of mutual evolution that benefited both humans and the chosen animal. New lines of research indicate that the secret to our bonding with these species may lie in a hormone that we share with other mammals, whose effects seem to have evolved along with our increasing intimacy. This hormone, oxytocin, was identified in 1902 as the hormone that induces labor contractions. 50 years later, its role in the release of breast milk was also deduced. Oxytocin was considered a female hormone until 1970, when it was discovered that oxytocin-producing cells branch out from the hypothalamus, where it is produced, into every key brain region known to be involved in behavior and emotion in both males and females. However, the hormone estrogen, higher in females, does increase the release of oxytocin, as well as its distribution and the sensitivity of its receptors. Accumulating evidence has demonstrated that oxytocin decreases feelings of stress and promotes feelings of trust and well-being. Oxytocin levels rise in both participants during positive human-human interactions and human-animal interactions, as simple as the rhythmic petting of a rat. The National Institutes of Health is currently funding an interdisciplinary investigation into the role of oxytocin in mother-infant bonding, human-animal interactions, and the development of societal bonds. Now I understand that there are substantiated biological reasons why Traddle and I love our dogs so much, that such attachments have measurable health benefits, and that such feelings are shared by many people and their pets. I might also add that the cross-cultural association of dogs with ancient female deities and the contemporary instances of women in other cultures breastfeeding wolf pups are indicators that women were probably the domesticators of canines, and that the connection between women and their dogs has deep-seated and significant societal roots. I made a little copy here of a 32,000-year-old foot-tall carving of a meld of a lion human, which I think is really beautiful. It's carved in a mammoth tusk. And I made a little copy of some of the health benefits of having a pet, biological health benefits. You can look at those later. And just in the process of doing this little reading for Laura, I realized that one of the main things in my artwork is my deep bonding with nature. And nature has always been really important in my life. And I make a lot of melds of people and animals. And here's one I brought to share.
Thank you very much, Sylvia. It is now time to introduce our speaker for today, Laura Lott. I am very pleased to be her convener because I missed her personal reflection that she did last summer, so I'm very pleased to hear you speak today on animals and spirituality. Thank you, Laura.
Hey. Okay. All I needed to know I learned from my furry friends. Acceptance. How am I going to keep my head above water this Monday morning? The kids were already stressed by a looming lateness they were going to have to endure because their morning arrangements were altered and getting to school at the usual 7:30 a.m. was changed to 8. Come 8 and then 8:15, no one had come to pick them up from work, which is where they go with me until a ride comes 3 days a week. By 8:30, I was panicky. Where was she? I had just spoken to her the night before, confirming plans. She didn't answer her phone this morning or text messages. My frustration and honest worry about my absent friend heightened. I contacted her mother to let her know of my concern when I still hadn't heard a word from her by 9 a.m. My worry turned into anger when her mother blew me off, asking me what my problem was. And then again, the dial on my emotions was turned up when I found my friend to be safe, just unconcerned with my needs and her paid commitment to this transportation. My whole world flew upside down at this point when, as a result of this incident, I was told that I might lose the two most important people in my life if I could not find a new reliable solution, a person to hire to help out 2 days a week with the some 30-minute time frame I am unable to gap. This threw me over the edge, off the roof, and into another universe of outrage and fear. I scrubbed the anger and hopelessness of the situation out onto the cinder block kennels, feeling just as deflated with each passing moment and no closer to a solution, just cleaner concrete. At this point, it was time for me to go out with the dogs for the rest of my day. And so I did. Throwing balls, wiping down endless plastic lattice on the fence, feeling enraged and powerless, tired, when it hit me. Literally, a ball hit my feet. I looked over to see Tonkers, a healer mix who has my heart. He was normally pretty possessive of his tennis balls, not giving them up even to get one thrown. But here he was, throwing a ball at my feet, and then another. And as I stepped outside of myself a bit, my viewpoint widened, and I saw Joe smiling up at me. Howl, wag, wag, he stiffly bounced from foot to arthritic foot, happy to have finally broken the spell I was under. I thought of all Joe had been through in just the years I had known him. Adopted from the pound at age 3, Joe lived with his crazy family for a year before his young owner died, leaving him and her infant son trapped alone inside the house for a week. Then, being fostered for over a year, treated for and almost dying from heartworms, having crippling arthritis and storm anxiety, he didn't complain. He was happy to be there. I got down on my knees to embrace Joe, and I felt hopeful and rested. They all gathered around me, focused on me, and me on each one of them. The love I felt in the 3,000 square feet of concrete was amazing. Surrounded by my teachers, my loved ones, my family, my furry friends, I am taught acceptance. To accept each and every moment life gives as it is, not to struggle and grumble against it, which are surefire ways not to get what you want. In reality, acceptance is the only way out. Then it can change. Struggling against the negative only keeps the negative with you longer, and acceptance allows you to live fully. Love. A child in turmoil, total, complete anguish, screaming the frustration out in loud, inhuman sounds, flailing, throwing, unreachable, filled with such rage, pain, self-doubt, and fear. Every time, the shy, gentle, nearly white cat shows himself. With purpose and unfazed by the commotion, he comes silently, it is as if he simply appears in the midst of the situation and is present. I watch as each time this child, halting and jutting back and forth, is able to reach out and stroke Deo's cheek with the touch of a feather. I watch the mood change, the direction move. I wait as their internal torture dissipates like smoke from a smoldering flame. Deo climbs down and puts his nose closer to their heads but doesn't touch. The big, nearly white cat usually runs at the sound of running feet and goes the opposite direction from yelling, yet somehow he has something he needs to offer in these times. I watch as the pain begins to soften and the children let me in. With Deo nearly touching them, the heaving settles, the tears slow, and the healing starts. From this, I learn about love. An animal doesn't have any rules or ideas on what you should do for him or what he should do for you. Love is love without any expectations. Like children, their spirit is clean and clear, crisp. Unlike children, age does not affect their ability to love selflessly. Forgiveness. I used to watch Clayton get down on his knees in such anger, cursing God, asking to die, screaming, demanding to be taken, challenging this almightiness. I would see this giant man of steel and iron fists crumple under the weight of his agony and shame, incapable of forgiving himself for the loss of his children, his wife, tortured by dope, by demons. I would watch Sarah go to him when I knew better than to approach anymore or was unable to. She risked her own furry little life to go to him, and in these moments she would sit, look up at him as if to say, I forgive you. There is no need for this pain, just love. Forgive yourself. And then in tears, this man that was to me so massive and so strong would collapse around this tiny dog and cry, holding her, asking her forgiveness, not quite understanding he more than already had it, and she would lick his nose. A dog forgives you immediately, I think. You could yell at her, punish her, you could be downright mean, and she still loves you. Not because she is dumb, but because she is better than we. Our inability to forgive leaves scars behind, whereas a dog can forgive effortlessly and naturally. How wonderful and peaceful this world would perhaps be if we could all live a little more like that. Living in the now. Animals have a beautiful way of living, one I try to adopt more and more with each day. They live in the moment, not creating a story or fretting about the things they cannot change. If they are in pain, they are simply in pain. They do not lie about wondering what this should look like. They do not create outcomes, distort things, or get bogged down with regrets. They are simply able to enjoy what is in the now. They fully embrace the fresh grass and warmth of the golden sun. They melt into a creek and become one with it. They don't tarnish their fun worrying how long it will last or wondering how much they will get or how much they will lose. Their minds are not muffled by what could have been or even what might become. There is absolutely no stress in the present moment. Let me repeat that. There's absolutely no stress in the present moment. These are but a few wisdoms I have gathered living my life with animals. And it looks like I ran really short.
Thank you very much, Laura. It was beautiful. I think we may have time to share some animal stories. We cannot pass the microphone around because it's in repair right now, so you would have to come up, which may make it even more meaningful. So if you have an animal story to share, please come up front.
I may think of my own cat stories here after a little bit, but one from last night, and I'll just use this time to make a little sales pitch. I found a gray, about 6-month-old kitten standing at 3rd Street and Fort Riley Boulevard last night. It was very cold and windy, and it's about 6:30, and I pulled over in the mobile station and ran back to him, and by that point he was standing in the street right by the curb. But I called to him and he ran right over and jumped in my arms and I took him home. So he's going to the shelter today because I have a very cat set very much in her ways. But if anyone would like to see me after or come after service and see him, I think it's a him, they're welcome to. Of course, I've always loved my cats.
I'm Jessica Sievers. I've worked with my mother, who's a veterinarian, for several years. And there's so many stories. But we used to have a cat that stayed at the office, and his name was Tommy. He was an orange tabby. He was a stray. Gosh, I miss him. he was there for several years, and when somebody would come in with a dog, it never fazed him. He would almost tease the dog and go, "You can't get me," you know? It would make him seem like he was more powerful than this large animal that was barking and straining at the leash to try to get this cat, and he could just stare it down. Whenever somebody came in and they needed comforting because of an animal that was sick, perhaps dying, he would come, and almost sensing that, come and sit by the person or curl up in their lap. And without them even realizing it, he'd be there and they'd be petting him, and you'd see that they would just kind of melt a little bit. When we would have animals that would be ill, he was free to run around the whole place and back in the kennels and the hospitalization rooms. And times that we could be there, we'd keep a close watch. Times that we couldn't, he would be there. And it was almost a mixed blessing because he would pick out the ones that he knew it was time, and he would stay there with them. And so you'd almost, you know, feel like we're going to pull this one through. And Tommy'd come up and he'd take his perch, you know, beside their kennel, on top of their kennel, by the cage, by the door. You'd want to shoo him away, you know, come on, he's doing a lot better today, go away. But he would be persistent. We've had clients who have had animals that have predicted some of their own health issues, the owners. We've had an animal that seemed to just go out of control with worry and hyperness and just this unable to be separated from the owner. And for no other reason, no explanation. So they decided to leave the animal with us for us to try to figure out, you know, what's going on. Mile down the road, stopped at grocery store, owner had a heart attack. They know so much more about us and what's going on in our life than we care to stop and think about. And so you need to pay attention to when they start to worry, you know, when they start to, you know, sense your angst, your stress, your, you know, despair. You know, let them comfort you. Let them tell you what's going on in your life. Sylvia, you know, so many stories that kind of remind me of that situation, and I could go on forever, but, you know, man's best friend. A lot of our pets that we've had have been strays, and one we had for 16 years was this little poodle, and she's crossed with something else, and the guy that mows the county road and the median in between Highway 24 sides passed her with the lawnmower, and she was still sitting there when he came back about an hour later. Somebody just left this dog, and she wasn't going to move until they came back, and they didn't. So she was overgrown hair, scraggly matted. I thought, I don't even want to mess with this dog. And I wasn't working at the time. I was just hanging out and checking things out. And Mom gave me a leash. She said, just take her for a walk. Well, that was history. We got her all cut and trimmed up, and she was brand new and prancing around, and she was there when my sister was born. They find a spot right here.
Okay. Thank you for sharing. I think, Sylvia, you were right with the emotion and animals. I may need another cat or dog. I have been without an animal for about 2 years now. So is it okay? Are there any other stories you would like to share? Yes.
This is quick. I grew up watching a lot of violence and isolation towards our fox terriers, Captain and Flower, and I think that's why I have a lot of feeling for animals and people too, that I think a lot. But about 10 years ago, I gave up the chance at a particular girlfriend because she created her dog about 18 or 19 hours a day. I just feel very strongly about that sort of thing, but I am happy to say I've had 3 lovely cats in my home over the years since I was 20. That would be Abby Snow, Randy Frost, and Snowbird. So that's my story.
Before we sing our closing hymn, for which you please do not need to stand up. Oh, I am so sorry.
Come on up.
This is, I don't think I'm going to cry, because the reason that I think I'm okay is because our cat, Stella, died, I don't even know when it was. It's been a long time ago. But she was 21 years old, and I had given her water shots for her kidneys, you know, underneath their skin. I had learned to do that for a year. And then we went to Ohio, and she died while I was in Ohio. She was at the vet in the kennel. And I was okay. I was with my sisters, and I cried and so forth. But and when I got home, we got her, she was cremated, and so, but anyway, the person at the vet cried when I came. I mean, she was just, she was really taken by the fact that this cat. So, I mean, I had kind of cried in between, but I was home maybe, I don't know, not very long, maybe a day or two. I wasn't going to cry. And I sat on the couch, and she sat always in the last year or so right by the window. And I ended up crying for an hour and a half, bawling my head off at that cat. And I, to this day, feel that it was a huge healing for me, that I didn't stop and go away, or, I mean, I couldn't, and I just, I didn't sniffle or I bawled for an hour and a half, and I know I somehow I figured out the time, but I think those tears are really worth it, and it's okay to keep going on and on. That story you gave, Sylvia, really helped me feel for that, because it felt it was okay, but now I feel it was really okay.
I work with the Riley County Humane Society. If any of you have adopted a cat recently, I mean, actually not a cat person because I'm really allergic to them. I'm a dog person. But if any of you have adopted a cat recently, you will probably hear from me, because we always follow up on our cat adoptions. And that was one thing I really wanted to mention. If anyone does have a stray, you don't know what else to do with them, go online, RCHSKS, or just let me know, and we'll find a place for that cat to be kept. We adopted 47 cats out in the last 6 weeks. Can you believe that? And I'm calling all of these people or emailing them, and everybody's happy with those cats. Everybody's delighted so far. What I wanted to mention is the fact that we were in Greece. The story about the white German Shepherd reminded me of something. We were in Greece on a, you know, tour that was more expensive than I thought we should have paid for. But anyway, there we were. And we were getting, naturally, we were out on a small yacht that held only 50 people, and it docked. And I got off the boat at this place, which was one of the small cities on mainland Greece that we were visiting. And there was an incredibly beautiful white German Shepherd next to the building that was adjacent to the dock. And it looked like it was really in pain. And I went up to it, and it, you know, drew back in the way that a animal that is in pain is. And I thought, how unusual, because what I have found all over Greece is that in Greece you almost never see, you know, the wild animals going around that you often see in, for example, Mexico, that are evidently feral, and often in cities just not being cared for by anyone. And so I was really shocked to see this dog, but it really did touch me. But what has happened in Greece is the fact that a German woman came into Greece just as a tourist, just as I did, like, I don't know, 30 years or so ago, And she organized a whole mission in Greece to spay and neuter these homeless animals. And so now you go to Athens, and there are these ancient old dogs who are sort of walking around, and obviously they're one of the sights, just like the Acropolis in Athens. And you can go up to them and pet them, and they're just as happy as they can be. And they're fed. I mean, people just feed them, you know. And that is the impact that one person can have with the whole issue of animal homelessness. And I hope that all of us begin to take that to heart and do as much as we can. I mean, it's one of the things we have to deal with in life, among the many other things that we need to be concerned about. But what is to be done about animals who do not have homes? So one person in Greece had that impact. Admittedly, it's not universal all over Greece. You mostly see it in the larger cities. But it was really pretty extraordinary. Thank you.
I grew up with all kinds of animals, ducks, cats, dogs, doves. They sort of came to our house, and one particular story that I remember as a child, our neighbor, not our neighbor, but friends who lived about 5-6 blocks away had a dog and was very unhappy, snapped at everybody, very unhappy dog, and they left town. We lived in Mexico, so the servants were left in charge of this dog. She had puppies. And somehow, she remembered, even though she snapped at us, we always spoke kindly to her. She appeared at our doorstep with her puppies. And I remember my youngest sister dressing her, putting her in the doll carriage on her back, and that dog you would never have recognized, her change in personality and, of course, being loved and taken care of. But her name was Squatly. She was half Cocker and half Dachshund, and the funniest looking animal you ever saw. But she was well loved by our family, and when I started going off to college, you didn't even have to say anything. She sat by the door. She knew somebody in the house was going to go away. But as you say, animals have a sense and know us better than we do. But she was well loved, and it was great in her life and our life.
It's got to be White German Shepherd Day. I took in a homeless white shepherd puppy many years ago, and at first I thought it was a terrible mistake. She was completely infested with fleas and ticks, and once we got her over that, we found out she had a horrible kidney infection, and like $600 worth of antibiotics later, she was better from that, and then we found out she needed to have a total hip replacement, and $3,000 after that, I had a pretty functional German Shepherd. But that dog was probably the most human-like animal I've ever known. She was always there with the kids, and she was very vocal, so not barking, but just, you know, weird noises, and I went through a period in my life where I was so despondent that I actually, on a regular basis, used to think about taking my life. And that dog was always there with me. And she used to always put her paw out. I used to think she just wanted someone to hold her paw, but I realized that she was actually offering her hand. And if you ever petted her here, she'd put her paw up and she'd force you to keep your hand on her heart. And, you know, I would lay there and she would give me comfort. And She was the only thing I had to talk to for a really long time, and that I could tell about that. You can't tell your children you're thinking about dying. And she listened. And she kept me alive. She had to be put down about a year ago. And my only regret is that I knew she had to be put out of pain, but I was at work, and because she was in such pain, my children had to be with her instead of me. So I couldn't be there when she went. But she's buried in my backyard. You're not supposed to do that, I guess, in Manhattan, but screw them. She's buried in my backyard. And I get to go out there and be with her, but I never had an animal quite impact me the way that she did, and I will always miss her.
Thank you very much for sharing. Now I'm going to repeat, please do not stand when we sing our closing hymn. But before we do, I would like to remind you that we have our stone soup dinner. When you go to the narthex, please, there will be plates for you and some of the food. And then please proceed to the old sanctuary where the soups and beverages will be. So, hymn number 123.
We're going to, she's going to play it once through all the way through, and then as we come toward the end of that, you can stand, then we're going to sing it, and then we're going to hum it. It's a short song, it just seems like we've gone to all this trouble to get here, we ought to do something with it. And I remind you, the secret of good humming is to make sure your upper and lower teeth are not in contact with each other while you do that. Otherwise, it kind of rings. And okay? All right. Thank you.
Okay, go in peace.